Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Health insurance made easy through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, my next guest is based in Clare's beautiful coastline. He gives private tours of the Cliffs of Moher, the Burren as well, and other places around Clare, explaining the history and the nature of that majestic, beautiful, gorgeous landscape. And he grew up beside another sea cliff, Slieve Liag, in Donegal, of course. And growing up, living, working beside nature and beauty has given him, I'd say, a great perspective on life. And he'll tell us more about that in a second, because he's live from our Galway studio this morning. Cormac McGinley, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver.
How you have you been outside doing adventurous things already this morning? That's how I imagine your life begins every day.
Well, I woke up this morning, patted the dog and headed up here to talk to you, Oliver. So I skipped my morning walk.
Oh no, sorry. But you saw lovely things on the way.
I did, yeah. Beautiful sunrise this morning.
Where exactly is home?
So I live about 6 or 7 fields back from the Cliffs of Moher.
I wouldn't expect any other description. A few fields back from the cliffs?
Yeah. I live in a little cottage back there. We were lucky enough to get in there when things were kind of low during the recession. I managed to jump in on something.
It's thatched as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, it came in at the right price.
So that's the story, but it's okay. And I'll come back to the thatched cottage, but I want to find out a little bit about you, because we can already hear the beautiful tones of Donegal. So where was home growing up?
So I grew up in Teelin in Donegal. It's part of a little Gaeltacht area there, kind of in southwest Donegal.
Teelin, I think Teelin, isn't that how you say it?
Chillin.
Yeah. You don't have Gaeilge yourself?
No, while it's a Gaelic-speaking area, my own family wouldn't have spoken in the house, but I was surrounded by families that did. Like a lot of my friends' houses, they'd only speak to me in Irish in the house, and I just answer them in English, to my shame.
And they'd keep talking Irish, I presume?
Yeah. Because I can understand it pretty well, but the confidence of speaking is coming back to me. I'm working on it.
And Chelan wouldn't be a lot far from Glencolumbkill?
Of the parish, part of the same parish.
So you can brush up on it anytime you want.
Yeah, I did. I did a course at Edges Gael there.
Oh, did you?
Just over a year ago, and I'd like to go back and do another one. Yeah.
And do you?
That's fantastic.
Do you have time to do that? Because of course, tourism is a season.
I suppose I run my business a bit different. I even feel a bit weird calling it a business. I take off as much time as I can. So even in peak season, I block a week off a month.
Do you?
To be able to, yeah. So time isn't really a problem for me. It's just what I want to do.
You're not always out gallivanting for the buck. You just you take life out of handy.
Well, I'm always out gallivanting, but just, yeah, not necessarily for the buck.
Not for money. The season would just be starting up now.
Yeah, I had my first tour just last week, so they've just kicked off now and it's looking fairly busy.
Does that mean that it's completely quiet in the winter? Do you have tourists that you look after in the wintertime, or is it just totally dead?
It's pretty dead. I can get involved in some, but I don't really take much tour bookings in the winter. Also because with winter storms and weather, you can end up cancelling and having waited around a week for it, so you end up writing off a week. So it's not something I kind of concentrate on then. But I'm out the entire time over the winter myself.
Oh, right.
You know?
What are you doing?
Well, really, if I was independently wealthy, I'd be doing the same thing anyway. Like, I've been wandering around shores and flipping over stones and looking for animals and fossils and plants since I was a kid. Mm. And it's something I was doing kind of all through my life. And then I decided to sort of pivot to make a business out of it about 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
And so if I was independently wealthy, I just wouldn't be sharing the things I find. But okay. I'd be doing this anyway.
You'd be doing it.
Yeah.
You have a degree. What's your actual degree in?
It was in zoology and marine biology. I studied over in Aberdeen.
You knew early on what you wanted to stick your head into.
Well, I loved it growing up, and I was into animals, and I was specifically into the marine environment. So I studied it over there, but when I got to the end of my degree, I was looking around at people and they'd go on to do PhDs, and often they'd end up kind of working in labs and places like that. And I got terrified of the idea that that could happen to me without me noticing.
Right, yeah.
And so I deliberately kind of stepped away from it as a career And I spent about 10 years kind of working at all sorts of different jobs, basically working out what it was I didn't want to do.
The opening of the visitor centre at the Cliffs of Moher, that kind of changed things for you, didn't it? That was,
yeah,
that tickled your fancy.
Well, by that stage, I'd already kind of, like I say, worked out what I didn't want to do, and I'd decided that I wanted to work outdoors, no matter what I was involved in. And so they opened up the centre in 2007, and in 2006 they advertised for jobs for rangers, and I applied and got accepted on. So I came back to the country actually for that job. I thought I'd spend a year there, and almost 20 years later, I'm still down there in County Clare.
And you spent specifically 11 years as a ranger?
Yeah, about 11 and a half years, yeah.
Before you went out on your own. Where were you when you found out? Because you said you came back to Ireland. Where were you when you found out you got this job down there?
I was down in Ghana at the time. I was actually just off the coast of Ghana. We got a call on the satellite phone telling me I had a job interview.
What were you doing in Ghana?
I was transport. See, I grew up in a fishing family.
Yeah.
And my father sold his last boat. It was a 105-foot trawler. And he sold it to a man from Ghana. And so he needed to get it transported down there. So we had a skipper from Killybegs, an engineer from Roscommon, and a Ukrainian lad, and I was doing the cooking. And so we took us a month to get it down to Ghana.
Killybegs to Ghana?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It sounds like a Kevin Barry novel.
It was good fun. It was good fun. Now, it was funny. Our status sort of increased the further south we went. We were getting pretty strange looks in Madeira with a sort of rusty fishing boat. And then the Canaries, they were still looking a bit sketchy at us. We get to Cape Verde and they were pretty impressed with us. And then by the time we pulled into Ghana, it was, yeah.
Glad he still took the trawler. Which is,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Probably still doing business down there. That's an amazing image. Coming from Killybegs to Ghana, fella from Roscommon, Ukrainian, was it you said yourself?
It was a Ukrainian lad as well, yeah. Oh, we were sweating hard by the time we got into Ghana.
You got the call anyway from there. You were planning to stay in Ghana, were you, or were you?
Yeah, I was. I was going to stay there for a while. The owner of the boat had said I could hang out to his and kind of explore the country a bit, but I got the call to come back, so I had to cut it short.
Back to the cliffs. What does a ranger at the Cliffs of Moher do?
Well, at the time, we were the first kind of brought in, so yeah, it was a mix. You were providing information to the public and you were sort of crowd managing as well, you know, and yeah, you're keeping the place clean. You were picking up litter, all that, dealing with first aids, all sorts of stuff.
I met a fellow called Joe who said he'd been working there 18 years. That would be around the visitor centre opening at the Cliffs, only on Sunday there. Loves
that'd
it.
Be Joe Salmon.
Would it? Okay, he's a big beardy lad. Bit of a dude.
Yes, I know him. Yeah. I worked with Joe. Great fella.
I'd say they've all gone on very well. But you went out on your own. What's in your average tour now? Where do you bring people?
Well, I bring people a variety of places. Could be up the cliffs, up to the Burren, down on the seashore. I even run the odd tours up in Slieve League in Donegal.
Oh,
occasionally take stuff up there. But mostly, it's kind of, I stick to the coast.
And many of us walk the beach. We've no idea what's there. We're looking out to the water and we just like the smell and the feel of it. But we've no idea what treasure. This is kind of what you do, isn't it? The interesting things we're missing, you point them out.
Yeah, well, so when I was a kid and you're interested in animals and you're growing up, you tend to think of Ireland as not having that much, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, not tigers or elephants or any of these sort of interesting
yeah.
things. Look, as a kid in general, you tend to write off where you are and think of other places being much more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I travelled a lot looking at it, you know, looking at other animals. I went to Borneo, I went to South America, I went all over the place looking at this kind of stuff. And then when I was back in Ireland, I kind of realised that our biodiversity is largely on our coasts. Because we're an island in the North Atlantic,
yeah.
every time we go through an ice age, our country pretty much gets sort of stripped clean and then it has to recover, stuff has to get back. And if you're on a continent, that's okay because all your animals and wildlife will move south and then when the ice retreats, they'll kind of come back up and refill those niches. But on an island, everything gets kind of scraped off and then stuff has to make its way back to an island again. So that's why we, when it comes to land-based biodiversity, we'd have much less than mainland Europe or even kind of the UK because they would have had a land bridge to Europe at the end of the last ice age. And that's why we don't have
right.
snakes or, you know, any kind of variety of reptiles or a lot of that stuff. But when it comes to our coastline, it's been continually connected to wider oceans. Mm. So you have multiples, like on a scale of magnitude, more biodiversity along our coastline. In fact, it's probably at a level with almost anywhere else in the world really? At those latitudes. And because of the bad weather we get, it's prevented large-scale kind of industrial development on our extreme west coast. And so that saved a lot of it as well.
Well, we've never been so thankful for wind after that description.
Yeah, well, it's what, you know, it's, unfortunately, some of our biodiversity successes are in spite of us. If we could have got at it, we would have damaged it.
We'd have the resorts piled up along the Atlantic, yeah.
Exactly. We'd have flats on the cliffs of Moher, but those storms just don't allow it, you know.
You dug up a sea urchin, was it, last week?
Oh, yeah, the sea potato.
Yeah. Sea potato. But, yeah, I like that name.
Yeah, well, normally you just find them as a... you normally just find them as a kind of a delicate shell mm-hmm. on the beach, like finer than an eggshell. But I was looking for clams last week and I managed to dig this thing up by accident. But when you turn it over, it's kind of alien looking. It's got these sort of hair-like spines and they all sort of move in a rhythm because normally it'd be under the sand. Yeah. And with that movement, it would actually be propelling itself along underneath the sand. Something you don't normally get to see.
Just lovely and lovely photographs on your Instagram, Cormac's Coast. And you're due foraging as well, don't you? That's what you're looking for.
I do foraging like for myself.
Or for yourself?
Yeah, I don't take people out on foraging trips. I just forage for myself.
And what are you foraging that you actually bring home and eat?
I'd be eating scallops, oysters, clams, crabs, lobster. Yeah, anything I can get my hands on.
It's a nice kind of...
I'll even try and eat limpets, you know, anything at all.
Limpets, what do they taste like?
Depends how you cook them.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. My thinking on limpets is if you can make a limpet tasty, you'll never go hungry.
Can you forage a lobster?
You can.
Can you?
Yeah.
Have you
if
done
you
it?
You get spring low tides, you get these big low tides.
Oh, yeah.
If you're willing to go down and lie on your belly and look under rocks, you can find lobsters.
Lie on your belly and look under the rocks.
Yeah, you're looking under rock ledges, so you've got to get down in the seaweed and look under and scrape them out. It's worth it for a lobster.
I'd say it is. And seaweed, I presume. Do you consume that in soup form? Or
I do eat bits of it. You can eat all of the seaweeds in Ireland. It's just most of them don't taste great.
Yeah, okay.
So
and you know, we should say, what to look for, obviously, because you've got the expertise where the rest of us...
You just try. To be honest, there's never been a time... In the past, if you wanted to learn the stuff about the coast, like I was lucky, I grew up in a fishing kind of a place.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had my father's uncles who were islanders. And so they would have been taking me around and showing me bits, like small bits, and then fishing. And I spent a lot of time myself then playing around on the shore and learning. And actually French visitors and Spanish visitors would have taught me stuff. But there's never been a time where you can learn about that stuff yourself now. You don't need somebody to kind of take you by the hand as much. It was a necessity in the past.
Yeah.
But you can go down and spend time there now, take photographs of whatever you see, and then find out yourself what they are when you go home.
That's right. It's just the whale, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more open than it's ever been to that.
I know people who've done tours with you and they just said their minds are blown because they're walking along and then you just pick up a stone and you sell them a story hundreds of millions of years old.
Well, the whole area down there in Clare lends itself to that. I mean, the whole of Ireland, to be honest, but in Clare, because you've got this exposed geology, you know, you've got the Cliffs of Moher and then you've the burn next to it. So you've got all this exposed rock and all of the rock in County Clare dates back to sort of between 315 and 360 million years ago. Mm. So literally anything you lay your hand on is from that time period. So you're finding fossils, shells and corals, and you know, lots of stuff like that. And all of it dates back to that time. And when you realise you're kind of walking through or over that sort of landscape, it has a similar effect to, like, most people get this feeling when they stargaze. If they sit outside and they look at stars, it gives you that feeling that you're insignificant, but not in a depressing way, more in a sort of a freeing way that none of your problems really matter. Well, when you're on kind of rock like that and you realise the age of it,
yeah,
and you're sort of getting your own perspective on it. You're like, look, nothing we're worrying about.
Really. Yeah, don't worry about hundreds
matters
of millions.
That much.
What does matter are the seabirds, and you point those out to people as well. And we have stunning populations, don't we, of seabirds?
We do, yeah. We're very lucky. Like, especially along the Cliffs of Moher there, and even further south in Clare there, Loophead, you've got access to, like, visual access to amazing seabird colonies. Like, normally you'd have to get a boat and go offshore to get a chance to see things like this. But up there, you can literally come up, park your car, and if you've got a pair of binoculars, you walk over 100 metres and you're looking at... It looks like something out of National Geographic. You know, you're talking thousands and thousands of seabirds all lined up on rock ledges, screaming at each other.
And they're very active at the minute.
Not just yet. They're just starting to...
Just only starting to wake up.
End of this month, they'll start to appear. For the first 2 months then, sort of April, May, they'll be there. Puffins will only be there early in the mornings. Oh, but by the time you get to June, July, they'll be there throughout the day because then they're coming in and out feeding chicks.
It's just nice to have all of this in your head. No, exactly. I'll try to remember that. Camille, you mentioned the burren there. Obviously, the Cliffs of Moher attracts so many people because they're so visually stunning. The burren, do you have to kind of hike to see much of the burren? And does it get a bit of a bad rap because people say, well, it's only a slab of stone that goes on forever?
You don't have to hike to see the burren. You can pull up in many places and see the burren without having to walk. But you're right there. Like, I think the burren requires a bit more interpretation than some of our other sort of beauty sites. Because a lot of our other beauty sites, the attraction is mostly visual. Whereas with the burren, it is visually beautiful, but that is not where the real interest and stuff is in the burren.
Yeah.
It's when you get down and look at the smaller stuff that it becomes really interesting. And look, I would have made the same mistake. Like, when I first came down there and people were raving about the burren, I remember looking and seeing a field with cows in it. It was supposed to be a field. And I was thinking, if somebody in Donegal died and left me a field that looked like that, I'd be wondering what I did to them. Whereas down here, people are clamouring for them. It took me a few years to work out that the burren is actually good land disguised as bad land.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it does. I did see cattle actually over the weekend and they look kind of miserable because it doesn't look like there's much for them to
it
eat.
It looks insane.
Yeah.
It looks insane.
Out there in the wintertime.
Yeah. What's happening there is, so you've got to go back to the formation of the burren. So if you think that we're all kind of sitting on tectonic plates that are sort of drifting around.
Mm-hmm.
So like the plates we're on today, like we're moving away from the States at about the speed your fingernails grow at. And so if you go back in time 300 million years, that area, this part of the Earth's surface, was actually south of the equator. And it was covered by a shallow tropical sea. And limestone is formed when sea creatures extract calcium carbonate from their environment to build their shells and their hard parts.
Right.
And then as they die, all those hard parts sink to the bottom. And the accumulation of those is limestone. And so you've got like over 100 bands of limestone in the burren, all sitting on top of each other. But 290 million years ago, all of that was pushed up above sea level by a tectonic impact.
Right.
And it cracked all those layers.
That's what we're looking at.
So you're looking at all these layers that have been shoved up, and they've all got these fine cracks, initially fine cracks, but because limestone is alkaline and rainwater is slightly acidic, when rain falls on it, it finds the cracks and drops through them and slightly dissolves the rock. And over thousands of years, the track that the water follows becomes cave systems. And so all the water that falls in the burren tends to vanish into these cave systems very fast. So you don't have bog formation or boggy ground. So you can leave animals out on fields and they're not turning them to muck. They're not chewing them up. They've got dry ground, even in the wettest winter. And then the other factor is that the exposed limestone takes on heat all summer and then releases it in the winter. And so grass stops growing once your temperature gets below 8 degrees.
Yeah.
But in the burren, you've got a much longer grass growing season because the limestone is keeping the heat up. So you'll drive past it and think, that looks crazy, but they're actually on dry ground with growing grass, where everywhere else in the country, they've got to take their animals in and put them in sheds and feed them.
And they're getting the heat from the stone and everything.
Yep.
That's incredible. And I love the idea that you can get a heavy spill of rain and the water just disappears in the burn.
It's gone.
It's gone straight into it.
So if we have a bad winter, which you know, happens occasionally.
Yeah, it's
happened
a lot, yeah.
Well, if it's particularly wet, it can be quite hard to go walking anywhere. You're just trudging through muck. But I'll just head up to the burren. It's the one place you're guaranteed you can actually go out and hike, no matter how wet the weather has been.
Wow. Yeah. You've absolutely sold it to us.
Oh, it's an amazing... Look, it's It's a stunning place, and the history there is phenomenal because of it, because people have been making the mistake I made when I came down of judging it. People have been making that mistake also for a long time. And because of that, it was kind of left in a way that other areas weren't. So, like, you have that famous quote with Cromwell's general about there's not a tree to hang a man, there's not enough water to drown a man, and if you do manage to kill him, there's not enough soil to bury him. That's kind of a version of what I thought when you look at it and you go, I don't understand how people could live here. And because of that, I suppose the land hasn't been, you know, taken or conquered as much. So you have a much longer standing sort of traditions in that area.
Gorgeous. You do the odd tours, you said, in Slieve League back up in Donegal. And you go out in the boat as well, back to the island where your people originally come from. Tell us about, is it Owey Island, is it? Or?
Owey Island, yeah. So my father's grandmother was from Owey, and my father's mother was from Owey, and his father was from Gola, but he was very close to the family in Owey. So when I came back to the country, I was out of the country for a good few years, and then I came back in 2006, and I started fixing up my great-grandmother's house. Mm-hmm. And then some of my younger brothers took over, and they've done a lot of work out there. So I spent the whole summer out there in 2006, but since I got the job, I'll try and spend a week or two out there in the year if I can.
Lovely.
And it's lovely. There's no electricity or no running water on it, but it's amazing.
There's nobody else there, I presume, is there?
There's people there in the summer. Nobody stays there all year round, right. You know, yet. That may start happening, you know, but life is kind of coming back. You've sort of watched an island. Like, I remember my great uncles taking me out there, and it was like a ghost town. It was like one of these abandoned kind of villages. And so to see it over the last 20 years come back, everybody fixing up their houses, the community sort of coming. So I can see not too far in the future that you'll end up having somebody stay there all year round.
Wow, amazing. Yeah. You have a story, don't you, about your great uncle. Was it Mickey? Because you think there's harsh winters, they're not going to live into old age. He was never really sick, was he?
No, these guys all lived, like, these were funny, these great uncles of mine. I had four bachelor great uncles that all lived together in their late 80s. They sort of came back, they'd had separate lives, but then they all sort of came back together in their old age. And they were fishing up into their 80s. And Mickey had never spent a night in a hospital until he was in his 80s. And my father had taken him into hospital. And when my father came in to visit him, I think, you know, in the following day, Mickey was kind of in shock with him. He turned around to my father and he said, my God, Mick, I'm an old man. And it was like he'd never realised it until he was in the hospital and he'd realised there was people his age or younger than him in there.
Wow.
And I like the idea of being able to get to 80 before you lift your head and realise that you've aged.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
That's Owey Island. Running water either, is there? So
No. You have to go and collect your water or bring it in. But look, there's not much else to be doing out there. So.
It'd be no bother to you hiding under a rock looking for lobsters.
Those kind of jobs make your day, you know.
Camir, would you have stayed in Donegal maybe if it had the tourism industry the same size as they do in Clare? Because it's bigger, I think, isn't it, down there?
There's every possibility of it. You know, I suppose when I was young, I really wanted to get out of the country. I thought I wanted to travel, I wanted to see the world, and I didn't see a future for myself in Ireland, and it was just through a lack of thinking, you know. I was looking at a wider world and you're thinking grass is greener. But very quickly, like when I went to college in Scotland and I'm talking to people from other countries for the first time and about how they were brought up and their lives, it dawned on me then that I'd grown up in a fairy tale compared to most people. That the life I'd grown up in was unusual, in that it was, you know, surrounded by beauty and in an amazing community. All the things I took for granted as a kid when I was in it, but I'd realised it fairly quickly after leaving home. And so I made a point of always coming home and always spending like at least a month or so at home so I didn't lose connection with the place. And then in my late 20s, coming back kind of full time, and at some point in my 30s, even down in Clare, I decided that, like, whatever happens, I'm not leaving the West Coast.
And that's how you find yourself in a thatched cottage. Who are you living there with?
Yes. I'm living there with my Mrs. Phoebe Larkin. She's actually head guide in the Burren National Park.
Well matched.
Sort of like a...
And she's from there, is she, Phoebe?
She is, yeah. Phoebe grew up in the Burren, yeah. So she was part of the well, my conversion to liking the Burren. It took me a few years to realise what I was looking at.
You managed to do it with us in about 3 minutes.
Took me longer.
Yeah. And Fia the dog, what kind of dog is Fia?
So Fia's a Kelpie, like an Australian sheepdog mixed with a Border Collie.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. You have the ideal existence.
And that's what I'm going for.
Is Thatch a difficult thing to maintain?
You get about 30, 40 years out of a Thatch Ridge, depending on where it is. Yeah, yeah, it's not as bad. I think people think it needs to be constantly. I think every 5 to 10 years you can replace a ridge on it, but it lasts pretty well. There's a couple of, like, it can hold a bit of damp against the house, but it soundproofs your house. So you can have a full-on hill, like storm going on, and until you step out the door, you don't realise it's happening. Whereas I've been in friends' houses with lots of skylights, and you end up shouting at each other across the dinner table.
Yeah, that's right. The echo in the room. Cormac, an absolute pleasure. There's lovely messages, as you'd expect. Just started following Cormac's Instagram page. He's a great voice. It reminds me of Liam Neeson. Well, if Liam Neeson was from the other side of Ulster, but anyway. This person's transfixed listening to you. So knowledgeable. Coming from a fellow Donegal man, we are lovely to listen to. So, compliment for themselves there. And a beautiful interview about our beautiful Wild West. Can hear television producers clamouring for your guests. Looking forward to seeing the series. You've been on telly, I think, Cormac, haven't you? I'm sure.
Yeah, I've been involved with a couple of documentaries and I'm kind of messing around with stuff. But look at that. I'm just facilitating a life, really, Oliver.
It sounds gorgeous. And I want to finish up by saying, sending best wishes. This texter telling us the two Cliffs of Moher employees, Keena Garrahy and Tom Eustace, are getting married in Doolin on, I think it looks like this weekend, from all the La Hinch gang.
Sienna and Tom, yeah. Congratulations to them.
For everyone who wants to know more, cormacscoast.com, or you'll find you on Instagram as well under the same name, and you see all those gorgeous photographs and places that we mentioned, including Fia and the Thatch, I presume, as well. Cormac McGinley, enjoy the rest of your day, and thanks a million for bringing us across the West this morning.
You're most welcome, Oliver, and you'll have to come down for a walk with me.
I will, for sure, 100%.